Excellent point, too, Mater X. Andras Jones, I want to welcome you to the conversation and let you know that we've all kind of come to the consensus that whether or not you agree or disagree with the points that are made by the documentarians and these, especially these new revisionist histories with regards to the Third Reich and with regards to, you know, the Hitler and his motivations or any of that. What really, really strikes interest in all of us is the timing of these revisionist views and the effect it is having within our own micro movement here in what we call the true sphere. And I wanted to give you an opportunity, because I know you have some really important points and views about the subject, to kind of sound off. And of course, we have addressed the issue of the sea change over at Red Ice, so feel free to tackle that as well. And anything you have to say, Andras, we welcome your opinions.
Well, thanks for inviting me in. Since I'm just joining the conversation, rather than just jumping in and giving my points of view, I'd like to listen a little bit, and I'll just contribute as necessary.
Oh, of course.
But I appreciate you having me here. And, you know, I mean, I guess if there's anything, I'll just be clear. I believe that the Nazis killed members of my family, because I've been told by members of my family who lost members of their family in that war that they were killed because they were Jews. Not just by Nazis, but by Russians as well. And I also know about the persecution the Jews have experienced, that my family as Jews and as Russians experienced in this country in the 20th century. And so I believe that racial murder is wrong. And I believe that institutionalized racial murder is wrong. And I believe that it happened. And I believe that anyone who says it didn't happen is, well, I just think that they're wrong. So
sounded like you were just trying to like curb your language there. You can feel free to speak freely around here. No, we curse if need be.
What I'm trying to do is be very clear that zero patience for Nazis. I have zero patience for racial murder, and I have zero patience for apologists for said racial murder and those who carry it out. And I know that that's an academic subject for some, but it's not an academic subject for the people who are in the crosshairs of that propaganda. And I'm here to just represent, you know, and I'm not saying that anyone here is that, but I'm just saying that when I see people saying, oh, it's great, this new information about the Nazis, they weren't as bad as we thought, and it's really these, you know, the evil dot, dot, dots who told us that story to scare us from the really good white supremacist people. I just say you're all, you know, that if in that realm, you're dealing with a bathtub full of idiots, and I'm here to pull the plug.
Let me ask your views about the current situation with Israel and the Palestinians, because many of us regard this onslaught against Gaza as a form of genocide, that Israel is basically an apartheid society. I've observed long ago that when Jews start acting like Nazis, we're in trouble, and it seems to me in the Middle East that has been the case for quite some time. So are you equally condemnatory of the current policies of the government of Israel and its actions toward the Palestinians?
Well, first of all, I don't know any. I've never been to Israel, and I don't. I don't support militarism in general. I guess I don't feel qualified to talk about it. I think a lot of people who talk about it aren't necessarily qualified to talk about it. What I will say is that the pure focus on, like, some of the language, like when Jews start acting like Nazis. Genocide. I just think I guess if that's genocide, then so is what I'm an American, so I'm way more interested in what America has done in the Middle East, what America did to Iraq, what America has done to Afghanistan. And as an American, calling Israel on genocide is sort of like, I don't know. It's like, sure, as a part of a genocidal society, we can, you know, just like keep, you know, as people who are like, America is a genocidal country. We have committed one genocide, and what we do and the work we do globally continues that. So if Israel, as a small country that receives a lot of support from America, is a satellite of that genocidal American movement, yeah, I'm willing to talk about that. But talking about Israel outside, you know, just on its own as an apartheid state and as a genocidal state, I think that that's just, it's a kind of projection that, you know, we'd be way better off talking about our own country and our own country's genocidal actions than talking about not necessarily even Israel. We're talking about the government of Israel, just like we could talk about the you know, are you and I responsible for the actions of George Bush, or did George Bush steal an election and go on a genocidal tear through the Middle East that brought us alongside it?
Great point, Andras.
Well, I'm plumbing the depth and consistency, the integrity, if you will, of your opposition to genocide. I find it inconceivable you would know enough to understand what's happened here with the slaughter of Palestinians. They have destroyed 40% of what was Gaza in the past, and they continue to expand by reducing the amount of area that the Palestinians occupy. I think the evidence is very clear-cut here. Just as clear-cut as it is that America was born in genocide, the destruction of 16 to 20 million Native Americans is a gross example. Another was our intervention in Vietnam, which led to the deaths of some 50,000 American soldiers, but over 2 million Vietnamese. Similar effects have happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we're slaughtering very large numbers of these foreign people. We're taking some hits ourselves, but I don't excuse any of that. I condemn the United States for that, and I would think in all consistency you ought to be condemning Israel for its genocidal practices toward the Palestinians.
Okay, first of all, I wasn't invited here to talk about Israel. I'm not an expert in Israel, and when you're talking about Israel, you have to be, say, like you say, the Israeli government. Now, again, as someone, I'm not an expert in Israel policy. I am horrified by all forms of militarism. The state of affairs in the Middle East depresses me constantly. And when I look for what the cause of it is, I look back to my own home. I look back to America. I ask the question, if a left-wing peace government was elected in Israel, would they be getting the funding? No, they wouldn't be getting American funding. America supports right-wing militarism in plenty of countries. Yes, I condemn the murder of innocents everywhere, including by the right-wing Israeli government. That does not mean that I condemn Israel or that I can condemn all Americans. It's just I think that when you start talking about Israel as a monolithic state that is evil, then I think you're falling in. And I'm not saying that you are, but when people say, oh, what do you think about Israel? What do you think about Israel? I'm like, well, that's like saying, what do you think about America? I think that Israel and America are run by right-wing fascists, and that the people who live there are dealing with that. Right. And I don't think that the people of Israel are horrible, murderous people genociding the people of, you know, the Palestinians.
And Andras, I don't think that anyone here is suggesting that at all. And a matter of fact, I think that we're trying to make that distinction of there are Jewish people, Israeli people in Israel who do not support the actions of their government. And so that makes it to where we need to start looking at who is making these things happen. And I want to get back to the whole timing issue of this sea change of sorts, because I think that it is very interesting that this is happening to the Truth or Movement, to where people who really should be joining together and looking at how we're collectively being lied to, how we're collectively being screwed over, and how we're collectively having our consciousnesses diverted down one path or another to inhibit cohesion, you know, and to keep us from looking at the real enemies, really. You know, I don't think that people of Israel are evil. And I don't think that the Palestinian people are evil. I think that, and I don't think that all Americans are evil, or all Germans, or all Russians, or anybody, you know. I think that there are elements within each of those groups that have secured a level of control and power, and they're just doing whatever the hell they want. And like you said, we're all kind of just sitting here complicit just by being born where we were, you know, and by maybe prescribing to a particular religious belief or whatever. I personally don't have a particular religious belief, but I don't downplay or denigrate anybody's personal belief systems, you know. But I think that we need to try and look at where we need to figure out where we need to focus our energies on, as opposed to where they're at right now.
Can I make a possible just speculation about the timing here? You know, in one respect, we have the anniversary of Sharon Tate's death, right? So it's on, I was just in the grocery store and it's on the front page, remembering Charles Manson and Sharon Tate, of course, Helter Skelter, the great race war. We have Ferguson, Missouri is also sharing front page news of another modern race issue.
That's something I'd like to point to talk about a little bit more too, actually.
And I just want to sort of drop something in here is, a friend of mine said this to me almost 8 years ago, and I haven't, I'm only starting to think about it more and more now, is when the George Bush regime changed into the Obama regime, he said, take a look at the way that Obama was billed as the anti-Bush, right? And of course, they're not particularly different in actuality, but just the way that they're marketed. If you hated George Bush, you'll love Barack Obama, right? He's the everything we say that George Bush stands for, we say Barack Obama stands for the opposite. He's a peaceful man, we give him a Nobel Peace Prize, he's gonna change everything into this peaceful utopian society where there's no more racism and no more economic injustice, et cetera, et cetera. He said, when, of course, we always switch back and forth political parties, he said, if Barack Obama is billed as the anti-George Bush, wait till we see what gets billed as the anti-Obama.
Wow, right. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I had, just an aside here, I never really trusted Obama. There was something about the way that he, like, enunciated his words when he was actually running. but he just seemed duplicitous in a way, and I would notice how in front of different groups of people, he'd speak a different way. And to me, that's very, what's the word? I just had it on the tip of my tongue. I don't want to use duplicitous again because I just said that. But it was very suspicious to me, because I thought, this guy's just going to, like, you know, say one thing to one group of people just to get what he wants from them, and then say another thing from another. And it's not different than any other politician, I'm sure, that's running for any office whatsoever. But I always kind of suspected him. And as far as the Nobel Peace Prize, I mean, the guy didn't do anything for it. And I mean, if not doing anything is a qualification to getting a Nobel Peace Prize, I mean, I don't know. That kind of trivializes the whole thing in a way.
I also wanted to say that, you know, if it's possible, I feel like I agree with both points that have been raised here with regards to the specific back and forth between Andras and Professor Fetzer, you know, because, and let's just say that of all of us speaking, I think about the only one that could be truly classified formally as an expert in the subjects, maybe not the specific subjects, is Professor Fetzer, as far as, you know, science of history and the idea of how the science of history, as you made that distinction. It's not PhD in science and history, it's PhD in the science of history. So that's a key thing to think about, you know. But I would like to say, Andras, you know, I completely agree with your point as far as where our focus should be on, and how it's really hypocritical to isolate one group and say, okay, well, you guys are the bad guy, you're the evil ones, you know, everybody else is rolling along and you've got some sort of, like, you know, genocidal agenda. But I also, I gotta say that I do also agree with Jim as far as consistency of outrage, as far as, you know, placing the you know.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about that.
So, okay. Sure.
So if I say I condemn Israel, and I go to a rally with a bunch of people who are like, the Jews need to be put into the ocean. It's the Jews. It's the Jews. It's like, well, you know what? I'd love to have an intelligent conversation about criticizing Israel. But if that means that I have to have that conversation with people who are out and out racists who hate Jews, and I'm a Jew who they hate and want to put into the bottom of the ocean, then I got to say, I'm consistent over here, but I'm not going to join your hate party because we have an alignment that, yeah, when I hang out with Jews, at least not, well, when I hang out with my, with, when I hang out with Jews, I'm the one who's critical of Israel. And I have been since I was 15.
Sure. You know, you made this point.
So, yeah, okay. So I am incredibly consistent, but I'm going to be I'm going to also be consistent. I'm going to say, ask for the same consistency on the other side. If you have a moral outrage against Israel, then I want to hear I always want to have that couch by saying, I have a moral outrage against Israel's, the agents who make Israel what it is. Israel doesn't get to be what it is if it's not being heavily funded by other agents of genocide and oppression. And if there is a, if there was a left-wing peace movement in Israel, you know it wouldn't, it's, it wouldn't get funded in elections the way that the right wings do. So it, so in terms of moral consistency, I toss it back. If, as long as every time you talk about Israel, you make it clear that you're talking about the right-wing government of Israel, which is heavily funded by the United States and directed by the United States. It's not like the United States is sort of saying, oh, we'll give you money and then you just have to do what, you do whatever you do with it. We don't know what to do. We got to, we have to just keep giving you money. No, we're going to keep giving money to agents of oppression in the Middle East.
Or all over the world, really.
Well, all over the world. Yeah, right. You're going to do it in South America and elsewhere.
Yeah.
So when people focus their attention on Israel as the problem, then I say that's not morally consistent.
And, you know,
so,
you and Alan both made a great point, too. He made it before you came on, but you also reiterated it, Andras. And you also talked about this on Facebook, I know from your posts. You made a great point that when we indulge the hate speech, even if we don't agree with the hate speech, if we're, like, sitting there willing to sit down and talk to people who are speaking out of ignorance or hate, we are, in a way, condoning that hate. We're condoning, and that's your concern, right? I mean, is that, am I right?
Yeah. Hey, you want to criticize the, you know, the right-wing government of Israel? I'm right there with you. You want to criticize Israel as an entity? That's maybe more of a discussion because that there's a history there. But you want to talk about Israel as a genocidal, as
the Jews as a people that need to be stopped.
Right.
Yeah. And Israel as the genocidal state that is the most important one that we need to focus on. Why? Why is Israel the most important wing of the genocidal government that, you know, the genocidal structures that we are actually a part of? We're in America. We have a problem with genocide. Let's take our own government to task.
Jim, any thoughts or views you want to throw in
there? Yeah, I think Andreas has committed a classic fallacy of the straw man by exaggerating the position. He's been much too defensive. No one's criticizing Jews per se.
No one?
I have been critical. Andreas, I listened to you, Andreas. You listen to me.
Okay,
I've been very critical.
Jim, first of all, pronounce my name right. My name is Andras. It's not Andreas.
Andras,
second of all,
fine.
I never heard your point of view because I was invited in the middle of the conversation. And
Andras,
all I did
you're
going to
hear it now, all right?
Okay,
that's
fine.
Don't make me your straw man, Jim. Andras. I'm going to be very crude if you don't let me speak. I have been critical of the United States for, you know, having been founded in genocide of the American Indians. I've been critical of America for genocide against the Vietnamese. I've been critical of America for genocide in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm critical of Israel for its practice of genocide against the Palestinians. And if you don't understand that, there's something wrong with you, because the rest of the world understands it very, very well. It's got nothing to do with whether Likud party is in dominance or not in Israel. That's really a fantasy. The United States has been a staunch ally of Israel, in my opinion, quite mistakenly for all too long. We're providing massive foreign aid in violation of our own foreign policy guidelines because Israel has a vast stockpile of undeclared weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. And according to our guidelines, we're not allowed to provide foreign aid to any country with undeclared declared weapons of mass destruction. We're supporting them in ways that I find utterly grotesque. We were even resupplying them with ammunition to attack the Palestinians. That has me on the verge of nausea, frankly. And if you can't be a little more imbalanced, then you're going to go down as a gross partisan, because I've not found what you've been saying here to be rational or reasonable in terms of the totality of the evidence or the way we have been focusing or framing the discussion.
All right. As I said, Jim, I'm not an expert in Israel policy. You are, and I'm not challenged. There's nothing you've said that I disagree with. All I've said is that what I see around me, and I'm not talking to you. I'm saying what I see, and I was invited here to talk about Red Ice,
sure,
who are apologists for Hitler. So if you are not an apologist for Hitler, then I'm not challenging you. Challenge Israel. Hold Israel to account. You're an expert. You're a scholar in this. I am not. I'm a Jewish person in America who notices anti-Semitism. I'm not saying that you're a purveyor of anti-Semitism, but if you're saying that anti-Semitism doesn't exist and isn't a part of the conversation, then you haven't said that. But if you had, just like you said, if I was saying this, then I am. Well, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that I'm an apologist for Israel. I'm saying that I'm a person who doesn't understand Israel policy. I haven't been there. It's not my field of expertise. I'm a heavily propagandized American, and I'm a Jewish person who gets worried when large groups of people start shouting about throwing Jews into the ocean.
Yeah. And you know, Andras, just...
You should let Jim respond.
Okay, sure. Jim, go ahead.
Well, I don't believe that Jews per se are the problem. It's Zionism. There are Christian Zionists, there are Jewish non-Zionists. The problem is that Zionist position that is a combination of the two theses of Jewish superiority plus entitlement to the lands of Palestine, roughly from the Tigris-Euphrates to the Nile, that I oppose. There are too many Zionists in America. They control our press. They control Hollywood. They control much of our politics. All of our NSA raw data goes directly to Israel. That means they have access to all the information the NSA has been able to accumulate. And they're not looking for domestic terrorists. They're looking for information that they can use to manipulate and control politics in the United States. We have a report from a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs that was released back on 3 October 2012, based upon its review of 680 Fusion Center reports, where Fusion Centers merge federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activities gathered in 2009 and 2010. And would you believe that 680 reports from all over the country, they found not a single example of domestic terrorist activity, not one. Nor did they find any instance in which the fusion centers had halted an effort to conduct a terrorist activity. I mean, domestic terrorism is virtually non-existent, and yet we've been sold that bill of goods that we need to have this massive surveillance on that basis.
But back up. When, like, I was with you, like, I've got confused. When did you started this by saying you're opposed to Zionists?
Yes.
Now we're talking about the American police state. Are you saying that Israel is controlling America's police state?
By and large, I'm sorry to say that appears to be the case, and I'm pointing out that all the NSA raw data,
I'm sorry,
all the NSA raw data goes directly to Israel. Have you not studied AIPAC? Are you really this ignorant about
the
role of Israel and the Israeli lobby? JFK wanted the Israeli lobby to be registered as a foreign agent. That would have been a very appropriate thing to do. It has not happened. He was killed, and Lyndon Johnson didn't raise the issue, nor has any American politician since then.
And you also believe that the Jews killed, that Israel killed Kennedy too?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to get Jack. Look, if you want to get into that aspect, Jack was at loggerheads with David Ben-Gurion over whether or not Israel should develop nuclear weapons, which he opposed, but Ben-Gurion wanted to proceed with. I don't have any doubt that Israel was among the sponsors, but, you know, get in line. I mean, the CIA wanted Jack out. The Joint Chiefs wanted Jack out. The anti-Castro Cubans wanted to kill him in retaliation. The Mafia wanted Jack out. The Fed, the Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed wanted Jack out. The oil boys want to jack out. I mean, there are a whole host of others that collectively constitute the sponsors of the assassination of JFK. Israel was among them, but was by no means the most prominent or important, which role goes to both the Joint Chiefs and the CIA, with no doubt. But okay, the fact is, you got to draw distinctions if you're going to talk about JFK between the sponsors, the facilitators, the key players who made it happen, and the mechanics on the ground, their supervisors and coordinators. Were the key facilitators were Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover. Johnson, in coordinating the effort, he even sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination. And J. Edgar, who equally despised the Kennedy, was used with the FBI to cover it up. I mean, that's the bare bones about the assassination of JFK.
Okay, well, let's go back. The part that I'm having a hard time with, and let's just say I'm asking you, so I'm not challenging you. I'm asking you, you really think that the tiny government, the tiny state of Israel, controls the massive state of the United States of America? Our massive government, our massive economy, our massive military is controlled by the state of Israel.
That's a very flawed analogy. It's got
I'm just saying, you just said that. I'm not making an analogy, Jim.
Zionists dominate American political decisions, sad to say, and a lot of it is because they're able to blackmail and manipulate politicians in the United States currently, because information they get directly from the NSA during its massive surveillance, which clearly is not directed against domestic terrorists, because domestic terrorists are virtually a non-existent class.
I'm still trying to get at the one point you're making. You're saying that Zion, when you say Zionists, what do you mean? Do you mean Israel, or do you mean people who are not the Israelis?
There are non-Zionists in Israel.
Right.
But the Zionists, as I am defining the term, and you're welcome to offer an alternative definition, combines belief in Jewish superiority with its entitlement to all the most of the lands of the Middle East, from the Tigris, Euphrates to the Nile. And where a lot of what's going on in the Middle East, I mean, 9/11 was arranged to get America involved in wars in the Middle East to deconstruct the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of that region. That's what 9/11 was all about, on the one hand, regarding foreign policy, and domestically to create a monolithic Department of Homeland Security, which was modeled on the East German Stasi, sad to say. And we're having to deal with all the consequences of these changes to our government and the restrictions on the Constitution, which continue to this day.
Can I jump in here? As you pointed out, there are plenty of non-Jewish Zionists. There is a very strong movement of right-wing Christian Zionists. We have the head of Blackwater and the base of the Bush parties. There is a movement very strong here in the United States of evangelical Christians that are pushing towards the idea that not only do we join forces with Israeli military to create this idea of solidarity, but not from an understanding between sectarianism, but rather to push towards a violent confrontation. These evangelical Christians, who are very, very powerful and very, very violent, again, look at the head of Blackwater, they actually believe that the Messiah, Jesus, cannot return. The second return of Christ can't come until there is an Armageddon between these factions in the Middle East. So they are actually funding and pushing to have, this to me is purely genocidal, to have Jews and Palestinians kill each other, to have the entire Middle East wiped out, just to create the environment in which their Messiah can return. It's insanity that knows no bounds. And this is part of that movement.
You know, that's a really great point, Alan. And Andras, I wanted to kind of point out one thing that you seem to be hung up on, was you seemed to disbelieve the idea that a smaller nation could control a larger one. But I mean, I would point out that
No.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
What I have a problem with. So first of all, I have a hard time believing that Israel, which has existed for 50 years, or 60 years or whatever, has controls the United States, which is a massive superpower, which is responsible for the current state of Israel existing as it is. It looks more to me like the United States set up its own agent there and has controlled that agent and has kept that agent on the path that the larger entity wants. And it also gets a benefit, which is when things go awry, we get to blame the Jews, which is something that is hardwired. And this is something I hope you agree with, Jim, is that before the state of Israel, there is, our culture has been heavily propagandized to hate Jews through the Catholic Church, through, I mean, just through a history of blaming Jews for one thing after another, a history of pogroms and genocides. So the idea that this small government that was created by, you know, in large part by us and has been manipulated, you know, their own prejudices and fears definitely manipulated to do our bidding, is controlling us. I just think, you know, talk about a straw man. I think that's setting up Israel to be the scapegoat for our misdeeds. I don't think that Israel control. I have a hard time believing that Israel and the Jews control the United States and the all, you know, it just, to me, that falls into classic anti-Semitic scapegoating of Jews and blaming them for all the ills in the world.
I put it very differently. You're simply extremely naive and unaware of the current state of understanding of these issues, where prominent scholars from Harvard and Chicago have examined the role of AIPAC in American politics. And because they were doing that and exposing its profound effects, they were condemned. If that isn't an illustration of the power of the Zionists in the United States, I can imagine what would be, because this was objective, very high quality social scientific research by eminent authorities, and yet they were the ones who were pilloried for exposing the truth about AIPAC and its domination of American politics.
Andras, I also wanted to say, you know, Jim, really, I appreciate your point of view there, but I wanted to say that I hope you don't feel like you got brought in under false pretenses, because we weren't bringing you in to debate.
Yeah, because
about,
I was not. Jim, as I said at the very beginning, I'm not an expert in Israel, and I'm not actually, because anti-Semitism freaks me out so much, and because sure, the people who hate Israel are so disgusting and, like, personally threatening to me personally, I don't think about Israel. I'm not smart about Israel. I am I'm a Jewish man in America dealing with anti-Semitism in America and Red Ice. And yeah, I do feel a little bit like I was set up as the token Jew to come in here. Well, and the first question is about Israel, which is the first question that any Jew is asked when they come into a political conversation. And well, I reject it.
I just want you to know that that was never the intention. I mean, I hadn't even intended on bringing you in. Alan mentioned that you were available, and I thought that you'd bring another.
Well, then let's talk about Red Ice. Let's stop like.
Sure,
if you want
sure
to talk about Israel, have a show about Israel. Don't
no, that's
bring
fine,
me in.
Fine.
And Jim, I'd like it if you take back some of your insults, because I was not invited here to be an expert. I am defensive because I'm part of a Sikh community that has been overrun by Nazi, by people who are Nazi apologists, and I was brought in here to talk about that. So yeah, I am defensive against Nazis. I am not an expert in Israel. Maybe I'm uneducated. But you're the scholar here.
Keep doing your great work. None of us is an apologist for the Nazis.
No.
But we're all interested in getting history straight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we had a discussion before you arrived about aspects of the Holocaust, for example, and the general features related thereto. I'm glad to have you here. And I think returning to Red Ice is probably an excellent idea, because it is very puzzling why this particular venue should have become so obsessed with exonerating National Socialism. That seems very peculiar. And if you have any observations to make about the timing of this, I think we'd all welcome that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Andras.
And if I could just jump in real quick, guys, I wanted to just mention that this is in relation to the whole white heritage thing and all that thing that Red Ice has been going off on. And I have a personal bone to pick there too, because I happen to be half Mexican, you know, and I happen to also have Native American blood in me. And I have grown up in an America that has just looked down upon Mexican immigrants coming over into this land, crossing the quote-unquote border, into basically lands that were theirs to begin with. And so that's one of the things that's most disturbing to me with the way that the rhetoric has, the path that the rhetoric has taken over there with Red Ice. Because I'm all for cultural preservation. I'm all for, and I'm also all for multiculturalism, because I think that we're one friggin' planet, man. We all bleed red, unless David Icke is right, you know, that there is an alien aspect in our world. But, you know, I just think what I find most disturbing about the line of reasoning over there is that, as Alan pointed out, I wonder if it's one of those things that's meant to keep us divided, you know, and to get us fighting amongst ourselves, to kind of like kick the legs out from under the table of this movement.
Great point. Andras, please.
At this point, I'd like to hear you guys talk for a little bit.
Okay, no problem, brother. You know, and I think that the idea here that we are all concerned about, what brought us together in this conversation, was just the palpable distinction in the shift in rhetoric over at Red Ice. And we of course had to set the groundwork by looking at the points and the issues and the topics that were being discussed in the shows and in the podcast and in the documentaries and such. So that's why the conversation shifted to the veracity of claims on either side of the issue. And so, you know, it was merely circumstantial that anyone's being invited to sound off on anything involved in this topic. So,
I want to just commend Jim. Jim, you know, has not been here as a, you know, we're not set up as opposing opinions or things like that. He's been incredibly respectful and intelligent in this conversation, and I understand where you came in. And I also understand, again, this is the fear that gets brought up. I came home, turned on my computer to get on Skype, and I hear I get this email saying I've been mentioned on Facebook, along with Andras Jones is not only a crybaby Jew. This is the level of conversation. This is an email, you know, that just came in while we're talking. This is an okay thing to say. Which is obviously not. We talk about the whole timing. Matt Mayerx, you wanted to talk about Ferguson. I mean, we've known this, and Red Ice, I feel, was one of the ones who taught us this, or for many people, right, is showing a divide and conquer technique. And here we see how easy it is to fall into that, where we find ourselves at each other's throats instead of going, hey, wait a second, let's actually find what is it that's dividing us.
Alan, you make such a good point there. I really had wanted to take us back to the whole issue of Ferguson too, because it has, in my opinion, become a race issue when it was really supposed to be a police brutality against the citizens of America issue. And it's one of those divisive things. Race and religion and sexual orientation are the straws that break the camel's back in most movements. You know, it is those are, like, in my opinion, the three main ways to divide us, because we all have our own personal views about these things. And if we're focusing on those little things that keep us apart, you know, then we miss the big picture. And I think that, you know, Ferguson is a very good segue here into changing the line of reasoning or the conversation a bit. So if you'd like to comment on that, and anybody would like to comment on that, please.
Yeah, Jim, please feel free to comment.
I'll just make a couple of remarks about Ferguson. I mean, it's obviously a combination of police brutality with racism. Lawrence O'Donnell had three different witnesses, all of whom agreed that there had either been some kind of altercation in the vehicle or wrestling in the vehicle or some kind of fisticuffs in the vehicle, after which Michael Brown ran away. The officer got out of the vehicle, fired what appears to have been a warning shot. Brown stopped, turned around. He was hit a total of six different times, one of which entered the top of his head, which appears to have occurred when he was either bending over or even prone on the ground. Then there was another flurry of four shots, apparently fired at Johnson, you know, his friend in the vicinity, who was uninjured. But they are now trying to make out that, you know, the officer had suffered some severe injury, even though the chief of police had denied that the very day of the event. There's a circulation now of a photograph of someone in a hospital who has had his right eye socket damaged, and after surgery, you see him in terrible state, implying this is the officer. When you compare a photograph of the officer with this patient, they don't look at all the same. And besides, if Brown had hit him from the window and so forth, they would have hit his left eye, whereas the right eye that is showing the socket damage, this is clearly simply capitalizing on an opportunity to spread disinformation to try to exonerate the officer. But I think the potential benefit that can derive from Ferguson is that the whole country was appalled to see that massive display of military force by a local police. There's been this process of militarizing the local police that's been going on for quite some time now. It's very extensive. And I will just say that if the government is moved to reconsider that policy, the Pentagon policy 1033, Program 1033 of providing the surplus military equipment to the local police, that by itself would be a tremendous benefit. Some prominent politicians, Claire McCaskill and Rand Paul, have both picked up the issue, and I expect it's going to be hearings in Congress. And if they'll discontinue that policy, that would be a giant step in the right direction, because we've gone way too far in providing police with all kinds of equipment they should not have, don't know how to use, but when they have it available, they're tempted. They find it almost irresistible to trot out, and it changes their mentality completely from that of an interface with a community that is there to serve and protect to one that's there to menace and control. A military mentality and ordinary police functioning are really not compatible.
I agree with you on that one, Jim.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much.
And personally, I think this is why I get frustrated with this, because in America, this to me, this is a real issue. Not to say that Israel isn't a real issue; it is. But the turn that the most powerful militaristically the most powerful government is taking towards its own people is very, very dangerous. And I agree with you. Where I get a little bit nervous is maybe where we say, oh, you know who's pulling the strings for that? It's the Jews. It's the Jews who are behind the cops in Ferguson. And that's where I get a little, and I'm not saying you're going there, but this is where the red ice conversation goes. This is where this kind of conversation goes. And this is what I was brought in here to talk about, was to be, what is it Alan said? I'm a crybaby Jew.
I didn't say that. I said that.
No.
Right.
No, that's the kind of stuff that I and other Jewish people have to put up with when we bring up, like, just like people like African American people, when they bring up police brutality or racism, they're like, oh, the crybaby black people. Racism is over. No, racism isn't over. Anti-Semitism isn't over. Homophobia isn't over. Sexism isn't over. And these are the, you know, if people out there think it's a homosexual conspiracy to control the world, or a Jewish conspiracy to control the world, or a dark-skinned conspiracy to control the world, I think we need to look at who controls the world. It's white people.
That's where I'm thinking, too, that we need to start looking at that as opposed to at each specific little group within the world, you know. What was I going to say? Oh, I wanted to mention another thing, because I don't think it's a race issue as much as it's being made to be. But you're right when you say that racism isn't dead. There is definitely racial profiling going on. But it's also like an abusive power thing, I think, too.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at, there was a guy about a month or so ago, Eric Garner. There had been a lot of talk about him. He was killed by police officers for kind of like saying, sticking up for the people that the police officers were there to respond to. And because he wasn't just sitting back and letting it happen, because he had the gumption to actually stick up for his fellow man, regardless of what race, creed, or religion those people were, but because they were people, you know, he was attacked and eventually just murdered right there in plain sight, right in the middle of the day, by some people who maybe probably didn't mean to do that, but they, you know, went ahead and, you know, used their power, their authority to jump on this guy and eventually kill him. And yeah, I think that we need to focus more on stuff like that, as opposed to, oh, he was a black man. He was a man, you know, and Michael Brown was a man. And so was, I'm so having trouble coming up with, you know, a white or a Mexican or a Russian guy in our media right now that that has suffered the same fate, but, you know, it's just something against people. Jim, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Mater, before we have to conclude our conversation, I wonder if the other guests would like to remark more specifically about Red Ice and why it seems to have taken this turn. It's very curious to me.
Yeah, definitely, me too.
Alan, well, I think, yeah, go ahead, I think it's good. I just think there's good business. There are a lot of people out there who are trained to be fearful and hateful of Jews, and it's good business. And, you know, they may or may not believe that. I assume that they're sincere, but it's also, if you believe that and there are a lot of people who agree with you, that's just good business.
Yeah, it seems like I've heard that possibility as well, and I tend to wonder about the whole idea of a publicity aspect to it, and the idea of just garnering more attention by creating controversy. And of course, as Andras has pointed out, a lot of the people out there ready to, the subscriber ready money is, you know, definitely has bias that can be catered to at times, and this certainly seems suspect in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I must hope that's what it was. I mean, it's like, you know, what are the options here? It's either that they've turned into white power Nazis, or that there's a publicity stunt because, hey, look, we're talking about them right now. I hadn't listened to Red Ice in about a year, not because I had any issue with them, just because I was focused on my own content creation and whatnot, and it sort of just became something that I was less focused on. Now, certainly, we're all paying attention again and talking about them. So in that respect, it could work as a publicity stunt. But I can't imagine if it is a publicity stunt, it doesn't really seem like a sustainable one. I've given the example, it's like a fading celebrity who releases a sex tape, you know? People will talk about you briefly, but that's not going to make you famous or get your career back in line.
Right.
I'm tempted to think that it's not just a publicity stunt. I've heard people say, oh, it's, they've been infiltrated by the CIA, oh, they're this, oh, they're that. I don't know. The truth is, when I gave the example of, like, you know, being in a Tea Party thing that said one day, it stands for something else. I've aligned myself with something. I respected Red Ice. I loved Red Ice. I was inspired by them and supported them and just really, really held them in high regard. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I've aligned myself with something that has flipped. But the what I've noticed is, if you look at the conversation on Facebook, they also hold a certain amount of authority, right?
Yeah.
Because they've been so professional and so respected for so long, they hold a position of authority. And as much as I see people who are saying, wow, I can't believe this is what Red Ice has become, this is bullshit, there are also a lot of people going, oh, so this is what's really happening. Oh, okay, yeah, this is a really urgent matter. You know, the idea of, they focus on this idea of white genocide. I just went on a 2-month road trip across the United States. Let me tell you something. The white race is doing just fine. Okay? I have covered so much of this country, okay, I saw a lot of white people. They are doing just fine.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, right, Alan?
it's all good. I'm saying, I don't feel like they're under threat, that they're, you know, they're being bred out. Oh, there's going to be no more white people because, yeah. People are being convinced. And the other thing is, there are finer points, like, you know, Jim, the conversation is a difficult one to have, but I think it's an important distinction. We talk about the distinction between Zionism or Judaism. These are, you know, important distinctions to make so we can have conversations about, you know, actual military action and so on and so on. This to me is important. But when people say, hey, people are just being reactionary, they're not listening to my information, there is a difference here. Red Ice used to say, we promote people being open-minded, and they had this little joke. They'd say, don't be so open-minded that your brain falls out. Well, you know, if you're telling everyone, hey, don't be reactionary, be open-minded, at what point do we have to issue some discernment and say, don't let your brain fall out either, because you're being tricked by something. When they had, Red Ice had on a guest, he calls himself the White Rabbit, and he's this guy who's talking about white genocide. And he said, and it was like, oh, you're just being reactionary. He's not really a racist. But I went to the guy's website, and he has images on his website. You know, here's a picture of three women in headscarves, and here's contrasted with three, like, barely dressed 20-year-old girls in cheerleader outfits. And, of course, the cheerleaders are white, and the women headscarves are brown, and it says, which kind of Europe do you want to see?
Oh, I mean, do we want the Europe that's full of scantily clad promiscuous young women or reserved people who wear scarves on their heads? I don't know. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, Alan, but I just wanted to kind of go along the same lines here with this sea change of rhetoric from Red Ice and their white pride and white genocide and, you know, cultural preservation. And from what I understand, their stance is coming from, at least with Henrik, a stance from the Swedish person being forced to integrate refugees from the Middle East. And I think that they're kind of being pitted against the refugees as opposed to the government that's bringing the people in and forcing the multiculturalism upon them. And as a matter of fact, I was reading a comment thread on Red Ice's Facebook page, and there was a gentleman on there who was commenting from Sweden. And he was saying how, you know, he doesn't so much have as much a problem with the influx of immigrants coming into Sweden, but the way that Swedish culture itself is changing and becoming a more Americanized version of Sweden than a Muslim-oriented version of Sweden or the original Swedish culture, that he feels like his culture is being invaded more by the American version of the way the world should be, as opposed to any other threat.
You mentioned it at the beginning of this talk. You said it's the pop culture, right? It's the mm-hmm. you know, it's a corporate culture. It's yeah. not, to me, it's not even American culture or Scandinavian culture. This thing that's infiltrating everything. You mentioned Japan. I went to Japan. I was so upset. They're playing Britney Spears, and you know, you walk into a store and they're playing Britney Spears on the radio. There's
right.
signs in English, but there's McDonald's everywhere. And the thing is that McDonald's isn't, you know, Jewish or even American. It's
right.
this corporate entity. It's this thing. It's this ideology and this institution that is pervading everything. And I support fighting against that. I don't want to. Walmart in my backyard or McDonald's across the street.
Right.
McDonald's, is that a global Irish, conspiracy or what?
Mater and Trader, I want to thank you for arranging this conversation. We're actually over 2 hours now, and so I don't know if we have a limit. I want to play this on my own show, which is a 2-hour show, but I just think it's been a great conversation, and I'm very pleased with everyone's contribution across the board.
Yes, you know, Jim, of course, we did start about 10 minutes late, I think, on the two-hour mark, but I certainly understand your time is valuable, and I wanted to thank you so much. I wanted to, before you go, before we end the conversation, I wanted to give you a chance to sound off on this idea of resistance to multiculturalism, especially in Europe. Did you have any thoughts about this red-eye stance against multiculturalism, especially the immigration of Muslim and Middle Eastern people into places like Sweden and stuff like that?
Well, the United States historically, of course, has been viewed as the great melting pot where persons of different backgrounds, cultures, nationalities have come. I do believe that it's a wise thing for there to be a shared language, because in order for different segments of society to cooperate together to achieve common goals, they need to be able to communicate. So I tend to favor, you know, there being a national language in the case of the United States of English, for example, but that, you know, the cultivation of different cultural traits and so forth, I think is an enriching experience for any society, and that the United States has benefited greatly by virtue of that happening here.
Yeah, and I mean, wouldn't you recognize people's aversion to such a thing as sort of suspect and wonder at their closed-minded ignorance in that way? People who...
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what we are all puzzled by, because as Alan pointed out, here's an organization, a production company that's been touting this idea of open-mindedness and tolerance, and now they're shifting to this exclusive, closed-minded stance that seems to be the exact opposite.
Well, I do think that nations that don't have a tradition of multiculturalism, the Scandinavian countries, for example, find it very difficult to adjust to the presence of those from, say, African nations in their own boundaries, which is difficult to adjust to, not necessarily intellectually, but emotionally, and therefore takes a considerable time to adjust. And it's not going to be an easy road to pursue, but seems to be a virtually ubiquitous experience worldwide.
And, you know, I think you make a really good point. It's almost the temperamentalness, the temperamentality of the individuals, you know, emotionality is what they believe and how those beliefs are imprinted upon their own consciousness and awareness of their place in the world, of their people. And I think in the bottom analysis, I think a reason why a lot of the topics that have been discussed today are disturbing to people is because the bottom line realization here is, I think for everybody to consider, is that human nature is there's a lot of duality to human nature. And it's not a black and white thing. There's a lot of gray areas. There are a lot of special interests out there that interfere with objectivity. And so that's why, you know, what we like to pursue, and we don't do this at the exclusion or the sacrifice of decency and morality, because all the people that have talked today all freely express their outrage at immorality and their outrage at moral repugnancy. But the idea is that somehow we have to come to consensus, I think, about these about the topics and the ideologies without violating, you know, other people's ability to be themselves and to have their expression, whatever it may be. Because in the final analysis, as I pointed out on one of my Facebook posts, consideration of a revised history of the Nazis or anything, consideration of a revised history of any fascist movement in human history, the bottom line for me is I am still unconvinced that it's ever a good idea to round up any men, women, or children of any nationality and place them in a camp for any reason, before, now, or in the future. Yeah. That, to me, is morally repugnant. And so
I think we all agree to that.
That's right.
I think we all agree to that forever.
And so I stand on the general respect for humanity, that we should all be outraged. And of course, you know, you fall back on that famous quote of Edmund Burke's, right? For, you know, the only way that evil can get ahead is if people do nothing, right? If good people do nothing and good people don't express their moral outrage at situations that they can tell, they can intuit from their own experience and their own intuition that this is wrong. And I think that's why I welcome the opinions of Andras Jones, because he's a person who has strong feelings about this, because he believes that there's a moral issue at stake here. If I'm understanding you correctly, Andras.
Yeah. A moral issue that, you know, is a matter of, you know, for some of us, is a matter of life and death. Whether that's a life and death in the past, or life and death in the future, or life and death presently. So yeah, I did. It's it's a very serious issue.
I wanted to thank you for you know, coming out and talking with us, and I hope that, you know, we're all still friends here, because I know that our positions are sincere. We all have opinions, and I really want to thank Alan Green as well for joining us today. And of course, Professor Fetzer, thank you so much for making yourself available on such short notice. And I wanted to let everybody know to check out more of Jim's work over at Radio Fetzer, which is a blog, and it's also a podcast on Revere Radio, as well as many other networks, and assassinationscience.com. Is that correct, Jim?
Yes. Or assassinationresearch.com, which is a vast repository of articles and studies spanning many years that I co-edit with John P. Costella, PhD, who's a simply excellent guy and the world's leading expert on the Zapruder film.
Thank you so much. And, of course, the rest of us are all over at thesyncbook.com. And, Andras, you've got another web entity as well, correct?
Yeah, Radio 8 Ball. You can, right now, the Radio 8 Ball website is currently under construction, but if you look for Radio 8 Ball, you can find me. That's all one word, Radio, the number 8 Ball.
I'm you know, I've only caught bits and pieces of that, and I think it's awesome, just for the record, you know, and I think it's a really great idea, and I was really bummed out that we couldn't have been in Olympia, because I really wanted to play, frankly. And, Jim, I just wanted to say thanks again for coming on, and I'd like to kind of hint towards maybe you coming back on again and us talking a little bit more about the JFK assassination and 9/11, and maybe I know that you co-edit Judith Baker's website, so I would love to talk to her as well about her version of events.
Judith may be harder to arrange, but I'd be delighted to come back and talk about JFK and 9/11.
That's
anytime.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Jim. And Alan, again, thank you, brother, for joining us today.
Thank you all very much. Jim, it was a pleasure to meet you.
Yes,
me too,
Andras,
Alan.
Thank you for coming on, too, by the way. I wanted to make sure I thanked you as well. I wasn't trying to ignore you.
I'm glad you joined us, too. Yeah, excellent.
Well, that's our show this week, everyone. You be the judge of how this went, and if anyone was attacked or disrespected in any way. We hope this speaks for itself, and we thank you for listening, and look forward to many more amazing shows to come in the near future.
And I want you to know that we welcome all comments and are open to furthering a discussion in another forum. And hope that we can all keep an open mind.
All right. Thanks again. Say goodnight, Mater X.
Goodnight, Mater X.
Talk to you all real soon.